And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I am Tim Capper, along with Jim Robinson on the other side of the border. Knock, knock, knock.
Howdy doody.
Howdy doody. Ah, that's actually pretty funny. That is actually pretty funny.
Cowboy up.
Well, no, I was kind of thinking it's kind of a play on words of going over the border.
Yeah.
You know? Duty free, having to pay duty.
I'm just in like a cowboy state of mind tonight.
Well, then you should be in Calgary for the Stampede. I'm sure you'd enjoy that.
That'd be a long trek.
That's okay.
I could have stayed with one of your cousins.
Yeah, many of them. Yeah, Joe. Joe in Calgary. You know, he's actually the brother of Jim. He's over in Saskatoon. Yeah.
All right, before this show goes sideways.
It hasn't already. We might as well go ahead and talk about
it. Let's tilt it back on its axis.
Yeah, let's go. Here we go. It's one of those movies of the week things, disaster of the week things. Going to talk about it since it was announced today. It's most of the information we know about already. The Arena Football League announced that the full schedule has been finalized and was put out by the league, along with the launching and or the unveiling of the Arena Bowl 30 logo. It's information that we basically already knew, Jim, right? I mean, it's we already knew that the Philadelphia has the overall number one seed because of this week's win. So the road for Arena Bowl will go through Philadelphia. And they're going to be playing on Saturday, August 12th at 4 p.m. Eastern on the CBS Sports Network.
Well, we did learn that the second game in which Tampa Bay is hosting will be on Twitter.
That's right. AFL Now and Twitter.
A worldwide audience.
Worldwide audience. And it's been finalized, and there may have been some few rumblings on the message boards and on social media about when the Arena Bowl is actually going to be, and it actually has...
I heard there's, like, some boxing match going on.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know what it is. You know, the only money...
Regardless...
The only money I know is Darius Reynolds. So
the game will kick off before.
Yes. So it'll be Saturday, August 26th. It'll be, obviously, the lower remaining seed of the two. Between the highest remaining seed, it'll be at 7 p.m. Eastern at TBD.
TBD. Well, it depends on who wins these games in the semifinal round, and the viewership, not worked out yet, but I think we should, as fans, look forward to some upcoming releases from the league, in which the league will announce some technological advances that are going to be introduced during the viewing of Arena Bowl. Okay. When I'm told that these changes or these advancements could change the way football is viewed in the future. And also another announcement that the league will align itself with an industry leader within the sporting world.
Okay.
So we have some big things to look forward to.
Yeah, of course.
And that always happens leading up to Arena Bowl. And I also have been told that everyone's looking forward to expansion coming. And, hey, when are these exactly – are we going to have announcements? When's this coming? I have been told there's great potential right now as of today for an Arena Football League to return to the state of Texas.
Interesting. Huh.
Some things to look forward to as we wrap up this season, the 30th season of Arena Football, and head into the playoffs towards Arena Bowl 30.
Very interesting. Actually, it makes you wonder. You talk about all these technological wonders that they're going to be using, and I'm just wondering, you know, I've been, and you've been too. We've seen so much football over the years and all these technological advancements and stuff like that. You know, we've seen the helmet cam, you know, from its infancy in the USFL all the way through, I guess, now today, you know, how it was done. Shut vision and how it was done in some of the other minor leagues did it also. From the helmet cam the ref cam to the coach cam that is being done on MSN this year, it's you know, so many technological advancements. It makes you wonder, right, Jim? What actually could it be?
I would say let your imagination run wild. you have to think about some of the leaders of these teams and what they do besides arena football. And when you look at a Ted Leonis or a Dan Gilbert or a Jeff Vinnick and some of the partnerships they have individually and together or collectively and the direction they're going with these different ideas that they have, whether it's on the esports side or whether it's on the technology side, they're coming together in a lot of different ways to work on different ventures and different projects.
Right.
And when you get that kind of, I don't know, laboratory environment, who knows what they could dream up. And if it was said to me the way it was with that type of excitement and enthusiasm, I hope it lives up to it. And I'm excited to see what happens during the Arena Bowl. And I got to be honest, yeah. I'm kind of an old stodgy person. I remember when they introduced the puck in the NHL
podcast. Oh, yeah, Fox
podcast.
Sport. Oh, yeah, Fox Sports.
I hated it. But I don't. Honestly, I don't know what direction this will lead.
I don't either.
It's coming, and it's something to look forward to. And
there are some cool innovations in sports right now. You have what is it, the I don't know what they call it officially, but World Cup soccer, where you know when the ball has crossed the goal line, they're able to use the technology, I guess the 3D technology, to show if the ball actually has crossed the line or not. There is also how they do replays in tennis. I think that's probably one of the coolest things I've seen as of late, how they determine if a ball is in or out based on cameras. I think it's cameras that are up above.
You know, ESPN has that access cam they use during college. Well, they use it in other sports as well, but they use it a lot in college football. And I truly don't know what to expect, but I know there is genuine enthusiasm for whatever this advancement is, and who knows, maybe it's tied with the new partnership they're going to announce.
It sounds interesting. It really does make me wonder what it could be. Just wanted to talk about the logo for Arena Bowl 30. To me it goes, it's on par with a lot of the middle tier logos that I've seen over the years. It's not the best and it's not the worst, because we have seen just that in the history of the Arena Football League. So it's to me it's right in the middle. It's right in the middle. It's a logo that I think that will suit the game quite well. One thing I found out and actually reached out to the league to find out, Jim, I'm going to ask you and see if you know this, because I had a guess and I was somewhat right. So you know, sometimes that when it comes to logos in sports, sometimes these teams and the place that they hire these companies that do the logos will put in different things, Easter eggs, etc., that mean certain things, you know, towards the team, towards the region, etc., etc., etc. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There actually is one in this logo. It is the four stars. And I don't know how many of you noticed it, or how many just of you who've seen the logo have just totally bypassed it.
I know. I was going to say that the one thing that stood out to me in this was the four stars.
Yes. Now, again, I know the answer, but I'm going to pose it to you. What do you think that could mean in league history?
Well, I honestly don't know. The first thing that comes to mind is championships.
Okay.
In soccer, you use stars to signify. And I know when I was with the Storm, I would integrate the Swirl logo in fives to signify five championships for the team.
Okay.
Outside of that, I don't particularly know, other than maybe the start 30th anniversary, you're looking back to the start of the league and there were four teams in the initial foray of the league.
Jim Robinson, you are correct. You win no prize, but you're correct. It actually is in reference to the inaugural season and the original four founding teams in league history. Nice.
Yay.
I was thinking that maybe it could have been the four could mean that we're now that the league is going to be starting its fourth decade. I thought that.
You know, I kind of thought that for a second, but I think more meaningful is 30th anniversary. You look back and it's a chance to look back to the start of the league and the start of the game, and it started off with four founding teams, and you want to pay due and reference and respect to that.
Yep, you're right. So,
woohoo!
Yep, you're right.
I'm not that dumb.
No. So if you want to see a history of all the logos in Arena Football League history, you can head over to arenafan.com. They are listed under our history section, and gaze at the glory of what has gone from year one till now. As I said, there are some gems out there, both good and bad.
You should do a contest on the logos.
Oh,
rank them 1 to 30.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we could do that. Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, that's a good idea. We can do that for an upcoming show. Yeah, we can do that. Or we can do it. We can break it down since there's 30 of them. We can do it by sixes, and there's five. Do we have 5 weeks left that we can do this? I think so. We can rank them. Five sets of six.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll do that. Note to self. The games this week, I mean, the games were interesting. I mean, obviously, one was Baltimore coming off of a huge win the week prior versus the now once beaten Philadelphia Soul. Going up against Tampa Bay and another streak that was currently continuing. And also you had the Washington Valor coming off of a bye, who were also going to be playing this now Washington team, this Philadelphia team that was coming off their first loss. It made you wonder what was going to give. Let's start first with the Washington-Philadelphia matchup. This
great first half.
Yeah, fantastic first half. I mean, 15 of 15 in the first half. Yes, for Dan Radabaugh, finally ended up at 16 for 16 before he had his first incompletion,
which ties Shane Carden for the longest streak this season of consecutive passes completed.
Yeah, and the game was close. The game was really close, and I think what's funny is that, you know, it's good first half for both teams, and then Philadelphia just completely dominated in the second half. You know,
yeah,
they just,
and it went back to third quarter woes of the Valor. It's returned. Mm-hmm. The monster has returned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, besides Dan Radabaugh, I mean, there are some other goods to this game itself. I mean, Radabaugh itself finished the game of 26 of 30, 333 yards. Our first 9 touchdown game of the year, by the way. That's hard to say. Usually, we have at least one or two already. And one,
yeah, I'm kind of surprised that's the first one of the season.
Yeah, and one pick. By the way, I think that was his first. I think that was his first incompletion was the pick. Sean Killiamoku, 10 receptions, 126 and 4. Money Reynolds had 111 yards on 6 catches, 2 TDs. You know, Sean Brackett looked human. He really did.
Yeah. He looked like Sean Brackett.
Yeah, 23 of 37, 216. And Radabaugh, by the way, speaking of Dan Radabaugh, he came all so close to breaking the league record for completion percentage in a game. He was close.
This is the type of game you've been waiting to see from Dan Radabaugh all season. He played well.
You know, we're talking about ups and downs, you know, earlier when it came to good and bad logos and stuff like that. Yet Radabaugh has gone through you got to admit it, he's gone through every type of game that he could have this year. You know, he's gone through his garbage games where he didn't play it all well, but yet they won. And then he had this amazing game this week. What else, you know, what else could he do, you know?
Not throw a pick.
Now, here's a question that I'm going to ask you. Based on how he has improved so far, and it's not, obviously not just based off of one game, does this put Dan Radabaugh into the mix for Offensive Player of the Year? And possibly MVP.
I think he was kind of already there. He was just kind of on the periphery. This type of game, yeah, that boosts his standings in that argument. And the bigger thing is the time of year in which he did it.
Yeah.
You know, if he can continue to play at this level and this laser focused, that definitely can change the mind of voters. I would assume at this point most people have him in the conversation, but not at the number one position.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if this game alone does that, but I think it does help boost him a little bit.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. Also in this game, you had another milestone reached was for T.T. Tolliver. He became the first AFL wide receiver to have 16,000 yards receiving in a career. Would you believe, Jim, that TT is one of three pro football players to have 16,000 receiving yards in their career in major professional football history?
Yes, but if you had told me that back in 2005,
I know, eh?
I would have said no. There's a couple thoughts come to mind. One, he started this game off as a defensive back, mm-hmm. and actually left and went to back to the NFL as a defensive back. Another thought that comes to mind is that a high school teammate of his, and I've mentioned this before in other broadcasts, same graduating class, they played football together, they played basketball together, and then they went their different paths. Vince Carter. And Vince Carter's still playing basketball.
Holy
These
crap.
Two high school teammates are still playing their respective sports and putting up huge numbers.
Yes. Wow. And what's funny on the broadcast, how they unearth footage of TT playing basketball in high school was absolutely amazing. That was amazing.
You know, when he left high school to go to college, he didn't go as a football player. He went as a college basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until he transferred that he played football.
Yep. So TT becomes the third player, as I mentioned. Jerry Rice is first overall in the NFL with 22,895 receiving yards. G. Roy Simon from the Canadian Football League has 16,352. And number three is TT Tolliver at 16,071. So it is very, very possible that TT could become number two all time. It's very possible.
Love it. Yeah. Love it.
By the way, if anybody hasn't watched it, if anybody hasn't seen it, it is the what is it called? The films, the game films that are done by Ben Frettinale. He came out with another one for this week's game. He was able to turn this stuff out, and he puts out some amazing stuff.
Yeah, was it 50 yards?
Yes, yeah, yeah. He was able to, and it was just golden. So head over to our Twitter account or to Facebook, and there was a link there for it. And then you can watch his full, the 50-yard dash, if you haven't seen that film yet. That guy does some great stuff, has a great eye, and it seems to be
has a passion for it.
And a huge budding director. I've seen some of his independent stuff, and it's quite good. Really is quite good. Second game of the week was, and I'm sad that it wasn't on TV, was the Tampa Bay Storm Baltimore Brigade. Baltimore coming off of a huge win last week. Tampa Bay coming into a game with wanting to obviously get another win, but also to help extend. And I know Adam Markowitz with the league, he has brought up some great stats, you know, the scoring record for the Philadelphia Soul with consecutive quarters with a score.
Mm-hmm.
This is the record, and I know we've talked about this before, and it's been asked also, where does the streak by Joe Hill's rank in the sports annals of history? There are longer streaks. I mean, you have some better streaks. I mean, you had the streak. The hitting streak in Major League Baseball. You had, you also had Cal Ripken's Iron Man streak, which will never be broken. Not in today's age of baseball. You have winning streaks. You have everything. It's
Miami Dolphins undefeated season.
Yeah, that's something that's stood for eons. Also, you know,
I think though, when you talk about these things, in my mind, you can't talk about team streaks and player streaks together.
Oh, it's fair. That's fair.
Just because, team sports, they rely on more than one person to get something done. Mm-hmm. Whereas an individual streak, there might be a battery of people involved, but it's not a whole team effort. So I just personally would put a demarcation between those type of streaks and put them in different categories.
Now this is a streak that was held by Damien Harrell for more than 10 years.
And when he set it, when he broke the then record, everyone assumed the further he went and the longer he did it, the less likely it would ever be broken.
Right. Yeah. I think at that point, the streak was, I think it was Eddie Brown. Eddie Brown had the streak, I think at 40, 48 off the top of my head. I think it's 48 games. So it's, you know, with 10:44 left in the first quarter, Joe Hills captured his 79th consecutive game with a receiving touchdown, a two-yard pass from Randy Hippard. They will now be ensconced in history with that record. And you could tell when he caught the record, he knew. I've asked him before about the record himself, and he said he's just there to play football. But I think, from my understanding, from the story that was in the I think a local Bradenton paper,
yeah,
that his teammates, at once he got to, what did he say, was 65?
It was the week 2 game against Philadelphia.
Yeah, that he was saying, oh, wait a minute, this is actually something that I could break.
Yeah, I think it was that week 2 game. He hadn't scored a touchdown yet, and it was at the end of the game, and Hippard was like, bro, we got to get you one. And they did, and to be fair, Joe's pretty genuine about it. I don't think up until that point, really, the magnitude of it wasn't there. It was just, hey, I'm here to play. I'm here to win games. Mm-hmm. And I think once that occurred, you know, it became relevant to, like, holy cow, I can do this.
And you could tell by his reaction, if you happen to be watching the broadcast on AFL Now, you knew. He caught the ball, threw his hand up with the number one, made sure he had the ball, and he gave it to the bench for his keepsake, obviously signifying that he is now the all-time leader in this phenomenal record. I mean, you look at some other leagues, and I've done some research on this. This is the longest streak ever, to give some context to this, Jim, in the CFL is 9 consecutive games. That's the record. Now, NFL, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's higher. I don't know if it's around the same. But that's one thing I don't know, is what the NFL record is. If anybody happens to know, please email me at tim.capper.
What you said the number was 17?
For
CFL.
Nine.
I want to say off the top of my head, I think the NFL record is like 12.
Okay.
But that's purely a guess, right, on my part.
If anybody happens to know, please, yeah, email me at tim.capper@arenafan.com, and we'll make sure that we give you full credit next week. For the game itself,
it should have been on TV. It was I listened to it on the radio, and it was exciting.
It was a game of returns. I mean, it was literally. Yeah, this game gave itself back in return. Duh. Pun intended. I mean, we had back-to-back kickoffs by the, you know.
Which I think, excluding onside kicks, pure kickoff returns, I think that's the first time in league history.
No, it's happened before.
Back-to-back kickoff returns.
I think it's happened before. I'm double checking what was read.
Well, regardless, it's supremely rare.
Yeah, no, that's true here.
Now with onside kicks, I can see that happening. Absolutely.
Okay. It actually marked the first time that two different men scored on kickoff returns since June 27th, 2015, when Alvaro Jackson and LaRocha Jackson both returned kicks for touchdowns for the Jacksonville Sharks. But as you said, not onside variety. So
yeah, and I think there's a distinction there that should be made.
Yeah, no, it's fair. That's fair. For me, it's what could go wrong for Baltimore coming off this huge win,
looking to win 3 in a row.
Yeah, and they just seem to, you know, they weren't. You know, they led at one point in the first half, but second half overall, it just. You know, it got as close as 42-35, but after that, you know, they just pulled away. Ings a touchdown, a 41-yard pass for a touchdown. You know, it just seemed. Do you think they had a? Do you think Baltimore had a hangover from last week, thinking that, oh yeah, we can do anything?
No. I don't think so. I do think if they didn't have Reggie Gray back, that offense would probably have some issues.
That's true too.
He's made a huge, tremendous impact. You don't have comeback player of the year in this league, and I don't think it really technically qualifies for a guy within a season, but his presence coming back from that injury, it has a huge impact on the Brigade. What I found interesting is, for all the oddities of this game, for the second week in a row, Baltimore had a drive. Not that they had 2 weeks in a row, but the league has seen a drive in which you had 12 plays and took eight. They had 12 play, 8 minute and 12 second drive. Huh. And last week, I think it was the Storm that had, what was it, like a 14 play, 8 minute, 10 minute type drive.
Yeah.
Which you don't usually see.
Yeah. No, it was an interesting game. As I said, I don't think it was a hangover. I just think they ran into, obviously, it was a better Tampa Bay team. But I think the fans that were in at the Royal Farms Arena came away even though it was a loss, they came away by watching a very good game.
I think the takeaway from this game was the loss the Storm had to Cleveland, what was that, 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. was a wake-up call to them, and it served as a little bit of motivation to have them to do their best to have a complete game. And I think there's still some things missing with the team they need to work on. But this was one of their – probably the most complete game they've played all season when you talk about offense, defense, special teams, and everybody picking up and carrying a part of the team.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you had a big interception by the defense to seal the deal.
Oh, you had some weird things, too, happen in this game, by the way. I mean, you had a Brandon Tompkins fumble, but then it was advanced another 21 yards by Varma Sami.
Yeah.
And then – This is a contention, and not only was it on the Storm broadcast, but it was also on the MSN broadcast. There was the onside kick attempt by Pat Clark, and it ended up going back into the end zone. And nobody knew what was happening, and then the call was sort of weird at first.
Poorly described, maybe.
Yeah, so to describe what happened, it would the
– Well, do you want to do that now, or do you want to wait? Because didn't we have a question on that from one of the not viewers, not callers, listeners? I guess.
Let me see here.
I mean, we're here. No. We can dive into it now.
Yeah, we might as well dive into it now. We'll talk about it now. So what happened is that Pat Clark, he onside kick, it only traveled 8 yards. He was actually kicked backwards into the Baltimore end zone, and it hit the back wall. And as you and I both know, when a ball hits a back wall, it is
dead.
Right. The ball was actually awarded to Tampa Bay at Baltimore's 5-yard line, and I even a vet like myself was like, "What?"
It was an odd play.
Yeah, the MSN team was saying it should have been a safety, and the referee calling.
Let's just hold on. How are you going to have it's the wrong end zone?
I know. My only thought is because it was. I don't know. Anyways, but also what made the confusion even more was that the referee called it a touchback, and I was like, what?
Wrong end zone.
Yeah. So what it was is actually a little-known rule in the rule book. It's rule 5.2D. D is in David. It is if a short free kick never goes 10 yards and ends up back in the kicking team end zone – untouched by the receiving team, it had to have been, because if Tampa Bay had touched it, the ball would have been dead there. Recovered by the kicking team, it will not be a... Let me read that again, because I said something in between. So if it doesn't go 10 yards, ends up in the back of the kicking team end zone, untouched by the receiving team, recovered by the kicking team, but in this case it was a dead ball, it will not be a safety. The placement will be at the receiving team ball... It will be the receiving team's ball at the kicking team's 5-yard line. And now you know. And knowing is half the battle.
What the ref really should have... I don't know what they're taught in that situation, but it should have been something to the... that the ball was not recovered nor touched by the receiving team, and the ball struck the wall. It was dead. As a dead ball, by rule, it is Tampa Bay's ball at blah, blah, blah.
Right. Should have been. But you know what? I'm going to give props to Joe Pester for knowing that.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, you're on. You know the rule book better than I do. That was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. So If I were to give another good this week, or a kick-ass good, it would be to Pester for knowing that rule.
There you go.
For sure. One last thing about Baltimore, by the way, which I thought was interesting. If you happen to watch our This Day in History over at Arena Fan on our front page from time to time, it was happy anniversary, Charm City. The gameplay this week in Baltimore happened to correspond exactly with the first ever AFL game played in Baltimore. So the Maryland Commandos played a neutral site game at the venue then called the Baltimore Arena, now the Royal Farms Arena, on July 15th, 1989 versus the Detroit Drive. And by the way, the Commandos also got their asses handed to them by a final score of 39-7. So,
well, the more things change, they stay the same.
Yes, they do. Players of the week. But before we get to those, I want to remind everybody that you know we are on social media. There are multiple ways that you can contact us. You can reach out to us over at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's all @ArenaFan. If you want to listen to the last three episodes of this year's podcast, that's over at SoundCloud/ArenaFan. And if you want to listen to multiple shows from years gone by, head over to Google Play Music and iTunes. We asked one thing we didn't talk about before the show was the players of the week. Offensive player of the week, Dan Radabaugh. We heard what he did. Obviously completed 26 of 30, 87% of his passes, and a season high 9 touchdowns. There were others out there, but I
would have thought Kendrick Ings was a verifiable candidate for that week.
What I was going to say is that I don't think that there, I think Radabaugh still topped the list, but there were others that were within inches of.
Well, usually when you have a big record set, they find a way to give it to that guy, which would have been Joe Hills. But you can't even say Joe Hills was the best in that game.
I agree with you.
Because Reggie Gray had a huge game, 11, 72, and 4. Mm-hmm. And then Kendrick Ings went 4 catches, 115 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 kick returns.
That's right.
So, how do you not reward that? And his all-purpose yardage was the 4th most this season. He owns 2 of the other top 4 spots. But, yeah, that's, the Philly game, shoot. That game Radical had was a special game,
Yeah, yeah. SK had a monster game too, but that average 4 receptions for 115 yards. I mean,
he had like 6 highlights in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the few times that even with all that SK and Darius did, Kendrick really did. He did overshadow them, even though he had his yards and receptions were less than SK. So, you have a good point.
The overall impact on the game, I understand Radabaugh getting it, but I just think with what Ings did that game, that's pretty special. That's got to make him front runner for one of the. Oh, golly, why am I tripping up? Not just kick returner, but what was that award? Playmaker of the year.
Oh, yeah, if we had Playmaker of the year, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't know if they're doing that again,
I don't know what the league's going to be offering this year. For defensive, I lost it. Defensive player of the game, it went to
James Romaine.
Sorry, James Romaine. 6 tackles, 1 for a loss, intercepted a pass, forced 2 fumbles, and 2 of the 3 forced fumbles led to sole touchdowns.
Can't argue with that, unless you wanted to go with maybe Kent Richardson, who also had an interception and recovered one of those fumbles.
Yeah.
But, kudos.
Well, LaRocha Jackson, too, 7.5 tackles and an interception.
Yeah.
But Romaine with the forced fumbles kind of solidified it this week. Fair to say?
Fair to say.
Cool. GBU, otherwise known as Good, Bad, and the Ugly. Sean chimed in, by the way, once again, to give us his opinions and his questions. We already answered one of his questions, by the way, so I hope you... And got all the information that was necessary for the rule there, Sean. Let's go with his good, bad, and uglies first this week, okay, Jim?
Okay.
His good was, it's an obvious pick this week, but I'm still happy to go with Mr. Joe Hills for breaking the consecutive TD mark. So impressive. Congratulations. His bad. My bad this week goes to Baltimore's Robert Hayes with a string of four penalties in the first half, including one for throwing the penalty flag for the original infraction back at the ref. I missed that. I completely missed that one. Why did he get tossed for that one? And his ugly. Webster's just updated the definition for ugly, and it's now Baltimore's kick coverage. Oh, my. So damn ugly. That was actually pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
I had trouble.
Speaking of Robert Hayes, who was it? One of the sole players threw a punch.
Yeah.
In the game.
Yeah.
And got ejected.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn ugly, too.
Mm-hmm.
Or bad.
Who's your good this week? Or what is your good this week?
I'm going with two. I'm going with Dan Rydabaugh's first half. 15 of 15, spectacular. And the Tampa Bay return game.
Nice. Nice.
Both those, I don't want to put one above the other. Both great performances. They were both really good.
My good this week, just like Sean, it's going to go to Joe Hills for setting this record. You know, a lot of people say that, you know, in arena football, that's, you know, what do you expect? It's arena football. It is not that easy. I mean, we're talking 79 straight games with a touchdown. That's crazy. Yeah. If I were to give an honorable mention, obviously, it sounds funny. An honorable mention to Dan Rydabaugh's first half. It's an honorable mention. What's your bad?
Washington and their second half turnovers.
Oh, my.
And for the game, they had five fumbles. Now, they did recover two of them and two interceptions. Things just ain't turning around in D.C.
Nope, and they're now on a 10-game losing streak. That's tough for any team, and more so on an expansion team. But we've had them. We've had them for expansion teams. Even longer. My bad is not a bad this week. It's my bad, just like last week. I wanted to give props to the Tampa Bay return game. I mean, it as we mentioned, we're talking about the show before. This game had everything, and it was a very entertaining game.
They were some bad men.
Yes, yeah. So for this week, my bad is not bad. It's bad. It goes to the Tampa Bay return game. My ugly, I'll usurp you on this one. Goes to Baltimore as a whole, offense and defense. Because
ouch.
Yes, because of coming off of a huge win last week by beating Baltimore. They basically beat themselves this week. By beating Philadelphia and knocking them off their pedestal with the streak that they had and the run that they had, to basically just summarily lay an egg in every single way, shape, and form. That's why, for me, the entire Baltimore offensive and defense gets my ugly for the week. What's your ugly?
Well, I wasn't going all-encompassing like you, but I was agreed with Sean, the Brigade kick coverage team. They gave up an average of 38.8 yards per kickoff return.
Duh.
That's ugly.
Well, do I really have to say? Well, it kind of makes sense considering that they're kickoff returns and the field, and, you know, it's 30 yards less the end zone. So kind of makes sense. But I get your point, though.
Hey, man, slap lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig.
Yes, yes. Suey. I get it. Man, you know, with the league announcing finally the playoff schedule and whatnot, and now looking at this, dude, we're in week 16. Week 16 of the regular season. We only got two more weeks left after this. We only two more weeks left of the regular season.
Yep.
Both games this week are going to be on Saturday. The game on Saturday between Baltimore and Washington will be on MSN and on AFL Now. By the way, and this is just thing, because I had the issue earlier this season, and I have to at least mention this to anybody who is part of the free subscription, which I am, for AFL Now. And I've had to do this myself. If you have any issues at all when it comes to being able to watch the game, you log in, you know it's for free. You're not in the two areas between, you know, within Baltimore, Washington. You're watching it across the country, and you have issues watching it. Please make sure you reach out to the league. I think it's info@arenafootball.com. Make sure you reach out to the league. Let them know where you're located, what your zip code is, and hopefully they'll be able to get you back up and running without missing too much of the game. Okay, just want to at least mention that, because I know it did happen to me earlier this season.
Tim.
Yeah?
It's a good info.
Now, the game itself, there are no lines out as of we're taping on Five Dimes, so we're going with Massey this week. And they seem to be pretty dead on anyways when it comes to these two things. The Baltimore-Washington game, I'm floored at this, by the way, and I'm curious to know if it's going to carry over, if it's going to carry over to the Five Dime stuff and to the rest of the sports books. But they got Washington favored by half a frickin' point. In what world does a team that's lost 10 straight be favored by half a point? I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
So I'm taking, or you're taking Baltimore.
Oh yeah. I'm taking Baltimore. I just don't see. Washington seems to be in turmoil. They just can't get anything going. I just don't see it happening. By the way, the winner of these two games so far this year, each team has scored 51 points.
Huh.
Yeah. I just don't see. Baltimore, to me, is still a talented team with the current leader for Rookie of the Year, Shane Carden, at quarterback for the Brigade. I just don't see how they did collapse this week. But, I mean, how they can collapse versus Washington, I don't see how it could occur.
Well, their biggest collapse was on special teams in the kick return game. And to be fair, Washington's not very good at that either.
Yeah.
So that's a wash. This game should go to Baltimore.
Yeah. Cleveland in the next game, that is the CBS Sports Network game of the week. Cleveland Gladiators coming off their second-to-last bye week. It's hard to believe that Cleveland still has one bye week left to go. Versus the Tampa Bay Storm. It is Tampa Bay's regular season home finale. And I think it's basically right now, Cleveland is still in this to trying to get the third seed and to face the Tampa Bay Storm again in the playoffs. They need a win, really, to do so. Have any shot of being a number three seed. The team has been surprising, but after seeing what Tampa Bay did this past week, does Cleveland have a shot? And by the way, Tampa Bay is favored over Massey's ratings by 4.5 points. Over under, by the way, of 104.5. I forgot to mention for Baltimore Washington, by the way, Baltimore Washington is at 98.5. What do you see happening here? Because Cleveland does need this win.
Yeah, they do. You want to be the three seed, not the four seed. I don't think either team was Baltimore or Cleveland want to go to Philly.
Baltimore's done something special, though. We've seen Baltimore do something special this year. But obviously, it is better to be a three, sometimes to be a three seed than a two seed. Than a four seed.
Maybe it's shorter trips for both those teams, too. Maybe that plays into it. I don't know. This game... if you look at how teams have stacked up against each other individually, team versus team, this is one of the tightest matchups in the league head to head.
Yeah.
And so this is going to be a close game, and I fully expect Tampa Bay to come out on top, but I do think this will be a close game. I think it'll be a hard fought game. Still don't know if Quentin Sims is going to be back for Cleveland once again. The did not participate list, as well was Brandon Stevens and Daryl Cato Bishop. For Tampa Bay, the only player on the did not participate list was Caesar Rayford. Good news for Cleveland is Derek Summers was back on to the limited participation list, so they have that going. Cleveland does have a nice pass rush. I genuinely think they can get to the quarterback. It's just the consistency level at which they've done so ebbs and flows with it. I think the interesting thing is going to be the signing of Cornelius Lewis by the Tampa Bay Storm.
Yeah.
All-arena player coming in football shape. How is he going to integrate with the line as it is? He's definitely serves as an upgrade. There's no doubt about that. Addition to that offensive line makes it better. So maybe that'll help stymie that pass rush a little bit. And we've seen when Hippert has time, he can pick teams apart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a guy, he's a quarterback that is able to utilize his legs to help make plays happen. And but having a guy like Cornelius Lewis makes you feel a little more comfortable doing that. I think that's a great addition for the team, and that's primarily why I think – well, that's not the only reason, but I think Tampa Bay wins this game.
One quick question when it comes to the playoff. Do you think the three seed will have four, five, or six wins in your opinion? No, I'm just asking. In your opinion, what will it take to win to have a three seed in your opinion?
Oh, man.
To me, I think right now I think it'll be five.
Let me pull the schedule up. I think you're going to need five as well. Man, yeah, probably that.
And if Cleveland and Baltimore are tied at the end of the year, I can't remember who owns the tiebreaker.
With who?
Between Cleveland and Baltimore. It is
Cleveland.
The Brigade is up 2-1 on Cleveland.
Yeah.
And they are -5. Even though
the first tiebreaker is going to be head to head.
That's right. So it is very possible. No, they don't play each other anymore.
No, they don't.
So right now Baltimore has the upper hand.
Cleveland's remaining schedule is Tampa Bay, Washington,
and that's it.
They have a bye week the last week of the season.
That's right.
Whereas Tampa Bay has a bye week next week.
And Baltimore
has three more games. They have the Valor twice.
Yep.
And the Soul.
That's right.
I'd have to say advantage Baltimore.
I do too. So.
I think back to your initial question, five is what it's probably going to take, but yeah. I think Baltimore finishes the season with six wins.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. I mean, it was a good game. It was a good week. We hope that week 16 is just as exciting. You know, don't forget, if you want to take part in the good, bad, ugly, please email me at tim.capper@arenafan.com. Or if you have any questions, no matter what they may be, things you want to see in the show, email me and I'll try to get back to you. And we'll try to implement those within the show as quickly as possible.
And hate mail. And I'll just ignore it.
There you go. Even if it is addressed to him.
No, in all seriousness, I would take it and appreciate it.
So, Jim, enjoy the season finale, the home finale this week.
Yes, sir.
I know you'll be up in the press box.
Yes, sir.
And the rest of you, I hope you enjoy the week, however you're going to be watching or attending the games. So for everybody here at AFL Tonight, for Jim Robinson, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.
Deuces.